Hello, all you creepy people, all you stankin' ass creeps. The last time I checked, it was still October. We're still watching scary movies. We're still using our special October theme music. The city of Portland is still a war-ravaged hellscape that is burnt to the ground. I've been roasting hot dogs on the smoldering embers of our once great city. What are you roasting on our smoldering embers? Nothing, apparently.
Corn!
Nice, nice.
That's what I should be roasting.
Corn adult.
As a corn adult. Anyways, this is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we, your undead blood-gargling hosts, select a movie with less than 5,000 votes on the old IMDb. We watch it, talk about it, and decide whether it's a gem or whether it just fell out of somebody's ass. My name is Cody, and face it, Jim, I'm a zombie.
I'm Beth. I've gone through something, and I haven't quite come out the other side.
I'm Buggy, and I'm a raving idiot. I'm insane, monstrous, and deformed.
Oh, here, here.
Excellent. So, as we noted, it's October. We will have a little October update for you later that I'll plug in at the end of this episode. We have to do all of these weird editing things where we watch stuff, we record separate things, we plug them in at the end of our full episodes. But don't worry, you'll get an update. But with that said, what have we been watching lately, or what have been highlights of October for all of y'all? I know at least one.
Elvira.
Hell yeah.
Number one.
We went to see Elvira at the start of the month.
Clinton Street Theater. Nice. Best crowds. I mean, we're lucky. There's so many theaters in this town, which is on fire, that have like the best audiences, the best turnout for people show up.
That is true.
Despite being on fire.
I know. And what we've been discussing lately is I waste all of my time building these stupid lists when we could just be out on the town watching movies.
That's not what we're discussing. We're just saying, what if next year the list was half and then the events were quintupled, quadrupled, true, something like that?
Quintupled.
What if I'm not even around anymore?
No! Oh my God. Oh, I think you should leave.
Nice, good one. Ba-doomp, schlurp. Buggy, you got any highlights before we get into our real business this evening?
I do, but I have to wait and save them. Special time.
Oh, highlights are special time.
Highlights are special time.
I have a movie review for special time.
Hell yeah. That's exciting.
I have one little other quick thing, which is, you know, plugging classes at Movie Madness. I went to see The Beaches of Agnes, which I've seen before, but like most things, seeing it with other people always makes it even better. So I took a one-night break from horror movies to watch a French documentary. Well, first I fell off my bike.
That happens.
Yeah, sometimes you fall off your bike.
Yeah.
Okay, what are we watching this evening? This is Buggy's selection for October.
Oh my God, somehow I'm nervous again. We're watching Nadja from 1995.
Is it 95 or 94? I'm getting my dicks mixed up here.
It's on IMDb, but I could be wrong.
You could both be wrong.
It could be one of those things. This
where
always
got like a limited
release.
Did say
on Prime that, but maybe, yeah.
Whatever. It was 94, 95.
94.
Okay.
She's wrong.
I was wrong.
Like a woman.
I was nervous and wrong. Mm-hmm. Should I do that again?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
We're keeping it in.
No, all my mistakes.
Okay, Nadja from 1994, or maybe 95, depending on where you were born and where you're living. This was directed by Michael Almereyda. I hope I'm saying that right. Also written by Michael Almereyda, based on the writing of Bram Stoker. That you might have heard of Bram Stoker.
Stop saying it. Familiar. This is like the Tom Hank thing.
You mean Tom Hank?
Yes. I said Tom Hank.
Did you say Tom Hank?
Have you ever seen Tom Hank in that Bram Stoker movie?
It's perfect. Then I'm going to go to the library and get my teeth cleaned at the dentist.
It's across the street.
the executive producer on this. We usually don't do executive producer, but the executive producer was David Lynch.
Who?
What do you know? A little known man named David Lynch. This is starring Alina Noenson as Nadja. You think I hit that last name right?
Yeah.
Lorenzen? I don't know how to speak Romanian.
Albert doesn't like it.
We got Peter Fonda as Dr. Van Helsing, and maybe as Dracula. Martin Donovan as Jim. Carl Geary as Renfield. Renfield.
Right?
Yeah.
That's my name.
Don't wear it out.
Galaxy Craze as Lucy.
That's my name. Galaxy
Your name
Craze.
Is Galaxy Craze?
Doy.
Nice to meet you, Galaxy Craze. Jared Harris as Edgar. I believe that's Edgar Dracula, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a little David Lynch as morgue receptionist.
And Susie Amis as Cassandra, the nurse.
Yes. Susan Anus.
Yes, Susan. Oh my God. I don't want to be here. Whatever the, what is the wording? I'm out of here.
The music and or the composer was Simon Fisher Turner. The cinematographer, Jim Denault, who has worked with Michael Amerita on other projects and worked as cinematographer on a weird movie from 2000 called Chasing Sleep. If you haven't seen Chasing Sleep, you should check it out. I think it could be a horror gem. I might even select it for a gem hunt pick at some point. Where can you watch this fucking hipster garbage dumpster shit face? It's on Amazon, the Roku channel. You can find it on YouTube for free at the moment. I don't know how these things work. They pop up. Sometimes they get taken down. And there is a DVD, and I believe there is a 4K restoration available out there. We rented the DVD at Movie Madness. What is this son of a gun about?
As per usual, I'm winging it. So we're going to see. To put it simply, Nadja is about her titular character. It is about Nadja. She is the daughter of Dracula. She was born by the Black Sea under the shadow of the Carpathian Mountains, which I just like to mention because they mentioned it about 500 million times.
I think that might be like part of how Dracula opens too.
Yeah. Right?
The book, everyone's read it. And I think that's, maybe I'm wrong. I meant to look that up.
And this is also sort of a modern kind of subverted retelling of Dracula. It is, it's about Nadja, and we're kind of like dropped in to her life right after her father Dracula has passed. He has been murdered by Van Helsing, and she's able to sense it. I believe she's like attacking someone, probably eating them because she's a vampire, and she senses that her father has passed. So Nadja sort of, again, like this is the central kind of conflict of the story, navigating her life after Dracula's passing. And we also sort of get the sense of like what her wants and desires are, and her desires are to be free. She sort of references that in talking to Renfield, who is with her and lives with her, and she also wants to find a companion. It sort of seems like she's trying to like just live, you know, kind of a normal, calm life. That's kind of her goal. We're also introduced to Van Helsing, who in fact murdered Dracula, sort of supposedly, and we get sort of his side of the story. He's a little bit like Van Helsing, I feel like, is always depicted in Dracula films as kind of crazy or a little bit like out there. And he's definitely like that in this. He is in prison, or not in prison, in jail, like overnight, I think, basically, because he murdered somebody. And that's how we're also introduced to like the rest of the characters, which is Jim, Van Helsing's nephew, question mark, and Lucy, Jim's wife. And they sort of have a conversation about how Jim's uncle, Van Helsing, is insane and how this is like always a problem where he's always getting into trouble or killing somebody. Not really, but he's always like doing something weird. And Lucy, obviously, kind of, that's a point of contention for her and her relationship with Jim. So we get also this sense of like the relationship is kind of strained, like estranged a little bit, because Jim is also constantly having to like help his uncle. And he has a conversation with Van Helsing where Van Helsing basically says like, well, Dracula might be dead, we're not nearly done. Dracula has countless bastard children, just countless, okay? And also, sort of after Dracula's passing, his body goes missing. Nadia has, like, retrieved it and is sort of, like, giving her father a proper burial. Van Helsing kind of thinks it's because they're going to try to, like, revive him, but that's not really Nadia's plan. She's just, like, sort of giving her father at least, like, that, even though she's not really, like, a big fan of him. And Van Helsing basically says, like, we need to stop his children. Our job is not nearly finished. And sort of for most of the movie, too, Jim's, like, not really interested nearly at all and, like, dealing with whatever problem his uncle is sort of referring to. But he also kind of just, like, follows him around everywhere. And other than that, I would say there's not a lot going on other than Nadia and Lucy. They sort of, like, encounter each other because we get the sense of, like, Lucy is sort of neglected because Jim's always focusing on his weird uncle. And Nadia's, again, she's searching for a companion and trying to, like, find what her, like, life is going to be now. She kind of has this new sense of, like, almost like she's free. Like, her father was shackling her down and she had to, like, live by his rules. So she's, like, kind of getting wild and having a good time, you know? So she's starting a lesbian relationship, basically. Her and Lucy get very involved. You know, shackles are off. It's time to date a girl. I love it for her. Maybe, like, her dad, Dracula, would have, like, stopped giving her money. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Maybe that's part of it.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah. he would be
turned
pissed
her
off.
Into ice.
Yeah. He was real mad. So her and Lucy start getting involved. And that's sort of how, like, I guess the storylines blend together is then we have, like, this conflict going on with, you know, kind of the classic Dracula story of, like, Lucy has been sort of entranced by this, like, beautiful, like, seductress who's Nadia, you know, Dracula sort of in a sense. And then Jim and Van Helsing have to, like, stop her. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Nadia's brother, whose name I forgot for Edgar. Some reason. Edgar, yes. And he's introduced. Nadia also decides to, like, bring him home. And then we also get Cassandra, I believe is her name.
Mm-hmm, that's the nurse.
Which is the nurse Edgar's who takes, like, care of Edgar, yes.
Kind of like his wife, though.
Yeah, they're like companions and they love each other. And then we also get kind of that family conflict as well. There's, like, Edgar and Nadia and Cassandra and then Lucy, Van Helsing, and Jim. And then other than that, it's just a lot of, like, dialogue. I think it's, like, a very dialogue heavy focused film, like a lot of, like, shots that are, like, very stylistic. It's very, like, indie and sort of wandering, I feel like, in its narrative. Am I missing anything? Do you think there's more going on that I should mention other than, like, yeah?
No, I did like what you're saying about it being, you know, a lot of dialogue and images. Somebody on Reddit called it extremely goth.
It is. It's very, yeah. It's very goth.
Also 90s. Very 90s goth.
Yes. I mean, yeah. It's the soundtrack. We didn't, you know, we'll did talk a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Get into that. Okay.
And yeah, I would say that. I don't want to give, like, the rest away because there is sort of, like, an end, like, an ending conflict and, like, a, you know, classic Dracula showdown. But yeah, it's basically Dracula with, like, a little bit extra pizzazz.
Hell yeah. And we'll get into some of this Dracula stuff in a second. And just a note off the top of my head, gonna bumble through this, but I saw a reference somewhere that this kind of came out as what people ultimately kind of started thinking of as, like, a New York hipster Dracula trilogy, unrelated directors, unrelated movies. Oh, but we had Habit.
Oh.
We had Addiction. Mm-hmm. And we had Nadia. They all came out in the early 90s. They were all kind of like New York hipster Dracula tales or vampire tales. Not necessarily Dracula, I should take that back, but they're all kind of vampire tales.
Okay.
And so I think that's kind of an interesting thing to keep in mind, that there were a lot of these sort of, like, artsy takes on vampires coming out in the early 90s.
Like, I mean, there's lots of things happening. I wonder what a, like, response to, like, Interview with a Vampire or Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, actually, it's cooler than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I do think this movie
Everybody was hooked on heroin and into Kurt Cobain in the 90s.
No comment.
But. Yeah. I want to talk about it more, but I do think the movie is trying to, like, do a little, I don't know. Like, it has, like, some themes in it that I feel like are very, like, not 90s, but just, like, indie. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I think that's...
sort of, like, family elements, too, of, like, family toxicity, I feel like, is a very clear aspect of this film that's, like, explored. You know, stuff like that. You know, like, I almost feel like same with... I think I've seen Addiction, because there's, like... I think I know the main actress in that movie. Like, I've seen her in some stuff. I don't know how to explain it. Who's the main actress in Addiction?
I don't think I've seen it.
Because I feel like that movie is also kind of about drugs also, yeah. Like, the title, but it's kind of, like, exploring that idea where I feel like this movie is, like, also just kind of about family trauma and breaking, like... Not, like, super... invested in that.
Lily Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. It's her.
Yeah,
it's her.
I have seen this.
Right, yeah.
I feel like it's also kind of that, almost, like, not like an allegory in a way. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I'm like off base.
No, it's like what totally the vibes were. But yeah. Like trauma and addiction. Yeah, and it feels vampires like are a good metaphor.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, sorry to derail us on that point. Oh, and fine. Then Habit was the Larry Fessenden.
Oh, I've seen that actually.
Yeah, I think we watched that a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe as part of October even. Anyways, back to the point. Back to our movie Nadja tonight. We'll do a little bit of analysis on this thing. Started out a bit about writer-director Michael Almereyda, who I didn't know anything about before we watched this movie. He studied art history at Harvard before dropping out to pursue filmmaking. He took up screenwriting professionally before he started directing films. His early influences included his father, a writer of Hallmark greeting cards.
Oh, I love that.
Nice.
And his mother, a femme fatale with a glamorous smile and childhood infatuations with Marvel comic books. And apparently he has an affinity for literary adaptations, which makes sense here considering the heavy Dracula inspiration. These are notes from a Cultured magazine article.
Yeah, I saw that he made a couple other movies. Well, maybe more than that, but the one that won him some praise was an adaptation of a book, and then he made a documentary.
Yeah, he made something about Tesla as well. So yeah. That's interesting. That's a little bit of context about our filmmaker here. Let's get into the vampire shit, because let's not beat around the bush. This is a vampire film.
Very vampire.
Bite around the bush.
Let's bite around the bush.
Hey! You watched that Merlin last night. Jean Merlin. Okay, go away.
So it's not only a vampire movie. It's within the long lineage of Dracula-related films. Just to warm up here, are y'all Dracula fans? Like, if Dracula was on OnlyFans, would you sign up to send him money?
I wouldn't if it were nudes. If it were just, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, just about, like, his life, I'd totally sign up for that. But I don't want to see, like, Dracula's butt.
I mean, is it the book? If it's, like, Dracula the novel on OnlyFans, then yes. Mm.
I was just picturing, like, vlog-style Dracula videos of him just being like, hey, guys, this is what I do.
Oh, I impaled someone.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to see that either. I just want like, this is the real me content.
I'd send him money to see him suck his own dick. Anyways, okay. Do you have any favorite depictions of Dracula in a film?
I love Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's
Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Yeah, it's the best one.
I know Tom Hanks wasn't in it, but it's so silly and so fun.
It looks so good, too. Like, that's one of my favorite things about that film is it just looks so pretty.
And Winona forever.
Oh, she looks so... No, that's the best one because it is unserious.
It's silly.
And it also isn't even accurate, really, at all, just because, like, this is something that bothers a lot of people, but I don't really care, is in the book... Like, the original book, Dracula isn't, like, in love with Mina, like, by any means necessarily. It's more, like, just sort of a classic, like, I just want to take advantage of innocent people and, like, corrupt things.
Right.
Whereas in a lot of movie versions, it's very, like, heavily focused on, like, the love aspect and, like, you know, reincarnation and stuff. But that's what I like about that movie, is that it's very romantic. Mm-hmm. And while it is gothic, it's, like, a warm movie, which I also like about it. It's also just high budget, so.
It's Keanu and Winona.
Oh, Keanu acting terribly, but it wouldn't be the movie without him.
Yeah.
True.
What do you got? I mean, Bela Lugosi, obviously, too.
Ones that I had on my list, and I'll admit I'm not a big Dracula in film fan. I love the book, but in terms of vampire movies and Dracula, it's never really been my thing, but I do have to give a shout out to Nosferatu the Vampire, Herzog's film from the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. That one's cool.
Shadow of the Vampire, you remember that one? It was kind of the meta one where there was vampire.
Yes.
That was fun.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. And then, of course, Dracula Dead and loving it.
Yeah.
Oh, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
When you think about Dracula, and then, you know, there's a lot of depictions of vampires, but then when you're thinking specifically Dracula becomes like a little more challenging. Because then you could get into, like,
okay, The Hunger.
Right.
Or,
sure, right.
Yeah. Like, the new Nosferatu, which...
I liked the new... That one is also, I feel like, a more accurate... Like, it is Dracula.
Yeah, it is Dracula.
And while it's not, like, everyone's cup of tea, I think it's really true to that story, actually. It's not a romance. I feel like what it is. It also looks true. Awesome.
It's against her will. Exactly. And it does look awesome, but it was just like, so I love cool that guy's looking. Other movies, and I wasn't expecting it to be like grab for the gold ring, try for the blockbuster.
I feel like it works. It's not like my favorite, but it's good. It looks good.
It was too CGI.
It did its job.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and Willem Dafoe's in it.
I mean, Willem Dafoe's the best part of it, for sure.
Yes.
The one thing I noted while watching this film was the use of the classic characters, as Buggy had mentioned. So we have everybody from the classic tale of Dracula. We got the Renfield. We got the Van Helsing. But they're in this different context, and the plot is building off of this original story of Dracula, which I found really interesting. But then I did a bit of reading and discovered that this movie is actually based on a film called Dracula's Daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So here's a quick note from film writer Kim Newman. As if under the impression that a vampire movie should literally be a parasite on other movies, there's a little bit of shade in this.
But. Yeah, oh, okay. Shit, yeah.
Almereyda has taken his plot almost intact from Lambert Hillier's Dracula's Daughter, a swift and underrated 1936 sequel. In updating, Nadja brings out the lesbian theme by having Dracula's daughter fall for the heroine rather than the hero. And in bulking out the tight plot, the film throws in the character of Nadja's turncoat vampire brother. Otherwise, this is character for character and beat for beat a remake of the earlier movie.
Oh.
So that's kind of interesting. But there's more. Apparently, Dracula's Daughter was rumored to be based on an omitted chapter of the original Dracula that was never published, although that film bears little resemblance to the original source material and rather takes its inspiration from a gothic novel called Carmilla.
I knew it!
Yeah.
It always comes back to Carmilla.
Which we have talked about before.
Lesbianism stems.
Vampire depiction always comes back to Carmilla.
Don't you love that?
This also predates Dracula. That's what's even cooler.
Wait, Carmilla is before Dracula?
Yeah, yes. It's like the...
That's what's even cooler.
Late 1800s or whatever.
Bram Stoker was inspired by...
I remember talking about this when we watched Alucarda, but that is so cool.
It's so cool. The OG vampire story.
There is never a new story, you know what I mean?
No.
But I'm not mad about that. The same with music, with everything. I'm just like, I love how it all comes from a thing that was before. It's amazing.
It's so fun.
I love art.
Yeah, so with that context in mind, do you have any thoughts on how Almereyda approached this film through the lens of this kind of being an updated Carmilla through the lens of a 30s kind of lesbian vampire film?
I mean, like, do you mean if that was, like, clear or just, like, how it, like, how did it work?
Does it color your thoughts about how this film played for you? Did you already know that somehow internally or subconsciously?
It just felt old, right?
I just feel like every lesbian vampire movie is always Carmilla, because it usually is. Mm. Because all Carmilla is literally just two girls falling in love, and that's basically it. Well, and there's way more to it. It's more complicated than that. That's right. Like a gross oversimplification, but like
power with dynamics.
All of, you know, the vampire movies where it is focused on the romance between two women, it's always the same. It's usually like there's a man involved where like the man's with one of the women. It's usually like this, the other woman, the vampire, is like corrupting and taking away innocence. It's always the same story. So I think it is like a subconscious, like, you know, connection I make. It's not something I'm like always immediately like clocking like, oh, this is Carmilla, but it just feels that way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like that too, because I just genuinely love Carmilla as a novel. I think it's really cool. And it's also just an actual like historic thing. There's like manuscripts of real history that this story is also based off of. So I always enjoy it. And I did kind of like get that vibe. Like the one you're saying about like older vibe. Like I know what you mean. Because it sort of does have that feel where it's modern, but also it's not. There's a lot of things I feel like that are like sort of classic, especially it being in black and white too. That always just sort of adds to it.
Yeah, the eternal. I know, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, we watched Jean Rollin's Fascination last night, which is also kind of a lesbian vampire tale. I feel like it's lighter on the vampire.
Heavier angle. On the lesbian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I feel like you could see some of that in that film as well. Although, you know, the way that Roland weaves his narratives through this dream logic, sometimes you lose the plot and it stops being connected to anything that you could put your fingers on. But there's definitely those components there.
I want to, while we're a moment on Fascination, it felt like Daisies.
Mm. Oh.
Just saying.
That's fun.
It had some like Daisies.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like two of them are pretty mischievous.
I love Daisies.
Beautiful film. A couple things here. I'm going to jump around on my agenda just a bit. So I found this article called The 69 Best LGBTQ Plus Horror Movies of All Time on them.com. And the quote here is, during the Hays Code era, which began in 1934, queer characters were reduced to subtext to appease the censors. Monstrosity consequently became a shorthand for otherness, especially queer otherness. Mm-hmm. And the lesbian vampire in Dracula's Daughter is one of the earliest examples of this phenomenon.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But then they come back later in the list to talk about Nadja, which they describe as an underseen gem of New York independent cinema. Michael Almereyda's Nadja fully brings the lesbian vampire film into the 1990s, coating its seedy exploitation heart with an art house finish. If earlier iterations of the lesbian vampire film were gothic and ornate, Nadja is more shoegaze, captured on bleary black and white videotape with an expressionistic flair. I thought that was kind of an interesting quote.
I'm such an idiot.
Don't talk.
I think I'm in love.
Why do you say that?
I feel terrible.
Sleep it off.
I haven't been interested in a woman in a long time. Such a long time. I mean, they're smarter than men, more sensitive.
I don't need to hear this. Do it.
Any thoughts about that? We'll get back to some of the art elements of this film in a moment, but I thought that was a good tie-in with what we were talking about with this kind of building off of this very early sort of lesbian vampire film history.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I like also the part of the quote that's sort of describing how in horror, a lot of times, like being a monster can be sort of an allegory for like being queer or being othered in a way. Because that sort of happens, like, not just in movies where it's blatant, but it's kind of like subtle. And this movie definitely is exploring that same theme. Because I feel like at the heart of a lot of vampire movies, especially ones with like this undertone, it is sort of making a statement about the way people perceive queerness, like maybe from like an outside looking in thing, you know, of like the corruption of what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. And then in the 90s, they were able to like take it, and especially as a not big budget movie, they could push it a little further.
They could actually like go more into it and make it like actualized instead of just sort of like an idea. Because I'm sure like in Dracula's Daughter in like 1936 or whatever, there's not like
tits,
women kissing.
Yeah, I'm sure. I have not seen it, so I can't speak from experience, but my guess is that it's very coded and very hidden within the context of that film.
And the one who is a lesbian vampire is definitely like 100% villain.
Yeah, because that is, and also not even in just horror movies, like, you know, in Disney.
Yeah,
like,
the voices.
Yeah, or you can also, like, in Disney movies, too, a lot of people comment, on, like just sort of the aesthetics of villains, too, a lot of times.
The thing that stuck out to me about that quote, because I know we're going to talk about music, is just the word shoegaze. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh.
Yeah, no, I thought there was a lot of interesting things that tied together our previous conversation with a couple of topics we're going to get into in a bit here. So I thought that was a good transition. But just to kind of put a little bow tie on the vampire stuff, I wanted to just do a quick discussion of the characters in various Dracula films, because I thought that the Renfield and the Van Helsing characters in this film were pretty interesting. I found a little quote from a blog called Through the Shattered Lens. It says, "The film's most subversive element is Peter Fonda's performance as Van Helsing. With his long hair and demented gleam in his eye, Fonda totally upends all your assumptions about who someone named Van Helsing should be."
Thing is, Jim, he was tired, lost, and he was like Elvis in the end. Drugs, confused, surrounded by zombies. He was just going through the motions. The magic was gone. And he knew it. I mean, he knew. I didn't kill him. He was already dead.
Now they've got to cut off his head and then burn the body.
Want a drink?
Yeah, good idea.
Well, we can't get a drink here, Jim. This is a coffee shop.
And I was thinking about this came out in 94. I was like, what about Bruce Campbell and Sundown.
Oh,
Vampire in Retreat? Didn't that come out right about earlier, the same time?
Right?
Maybe earlier?
Oh, was it 90s?
The DVD is sitting like, I mean, VHS is like right
next
to me.
Grab the VHS and look at it.
Well, I got to put my glasses on. But yeah, so Van Helsing, and when did Bram Stoker's Dracula come out?
95, 96?
That's a little bit after.
Like that. Maybe earlier, 92. I think, yeah, it could have. Oh, Bram Stoker's Dracula came out in 1992.
So, yeah, I was thinking they were both earlier. I think this is like 89, 91, maybe. But
yeah, I was feeling late 80s with Sundown as well. But, you know, just Bruce Campbell's performance as like a whacked out Van Helsing relative was so funny. And, you know, these are obviously different spectrums of films. You know, we have this sort of very New York art film in Nadja and this very campy horror comedy in Sundown. But I did think it was funny that this particular review called out the Van Helsing character as something like completely unique and like comical. And a lot of people have seemed to comment on the comical angle of the Van Helsing in this film, whereas, what the fuck, man? Have you not seen Sundown?
Yeah. 1989, by the way. Get 1989.
Get your vampire movies straight, because this isn't new.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of him being, well, I mean, I think the idea of, like, I mean, not in this one and not, I don't know, there's
he's
like,
he's crazy, though.
No, but the idea of, excuse me, the vampire who is the hunted as maybe not being the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And the hunter who is the Van Helsing as maybe being the person that's like perpetrating norms on someone who is, that's not new.
Yeah, no, it's that's not. True.
In this movie, though, Dracula is a villain.
Yeah, but it is also, it's true that he, I wouldn't say Van Helsing is good in this movie necessarily either, because he's kind of like so consumed by like this idea that he's like ruining everyone around him's life.
Yeah.
And he also isn't like very efficient at his job either.
No.
He just doesn't do it very well.
Neither does Bruce Campbell, I feel like. No. Is that
in the book?
Characteristic?
I feel like we need to read the book again.
Well, Van Helsing is depicted as sort of crazy. Like, in pretty much every rendition of Dracula I've ever seen, everyone kind of views him as like sort of this bumbling crazy guy.
Like his obsession has taken him over.
Yeah. Well, also just like his ideas are unorthodox to everybody.
Right,
like his like methods are strange. And
like
he,
an
like,
RFK Jr. type.
Yes. Yeah. He approaches things from the standpoint of someone who has eaten a dead bear carcass and
Tylenol.
Believes that Tylenol gives you autism.
Circumcision.
Oh, yeah, I took
today.
A bunch of Tylenol today and gave myself an autism.
Did you circumcise?
Yeah, I've been intentionally taking as much as possible to hopefully grow autistic superpowers.
Yeah, I've never been good at video games. The other character that I wanted to call out is Renfield.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the Renfield in this film is kind of a straight man, like a serious sort of like down to business, got his shit together kind of character. Whereas I feel like, you know, you go back to Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992 and Tom Waits' depiction of Renfield is just so over the top, just completely in an insane asylum.
Oh, yeah.
Eating bats or something.
And
some
I think that kind of has a history in the Dracula lore of Renfield being this kind of whacked out.
Because he got like half turned into a vampire or something. And then he's like,
because he's always like kind of starving too, because he never gets like actual pure blood.
Yeah.
And in the original one too, he's also like that. He's just whacked out and obsessed.
Yeah. And this one he was, I mean, but a lot of these things. Okay. So I'm going to go a little, another thing I thought about, speaking of Sundown, speaking of Renfield, not getting the blood you need. This movie, there's an animal blood supplement element.
Oh, yeah. I almost forgot to note that.
No. We must move him into Father's apartment. He's dying. You know he's dying. We can look after him together. We can save him.
You don't know.
I do know. I do know.
I understand this disease because I have it too.
Because I have it too.
But I've had treatments.
But I've had treatments.
I'm not in bed.
I'm not
bleeding all over myself.
I'm healthy. I'm healthy.
It's crazy.
No. He doesn't have to be sick. Our father made provisions, special medicine, plasma supplements. We have a big supply in our freezer. We can save him.
Which is like Sundown, how they have, like, they've created the new
type of blood.
Fake blood and then true blood. There was one other thing we were talking about.
Oh, yeah. The way that they're kind of doing the blood transfers reminded me a bit of the way they were doing the blood transfers in the film, The Black Room, which we reviewed a while back, which was an interesting spin on vampirism and, you know, nobody actually biting each other, but they have a machine that does all the transfers.
And that happens in this movie. The nurse, Cassandra, that we haven't talked a lot about, but she was kind of crucial. She was like Edgar Dracula's nurse,
companion.
But also kind of... And then once Nadja gets her hands on her, she's like using her to do her own
It's like
transfusion.
Sort of a vessel, but it's kind of confusing too.
Yeah.
Like
she's taking her blood though.
The lines, like blur, but she does do that.
Okay, enough of this Dracula vampire shit. Let's talk about some other stuff. Specifically, let's talk about the David Lynch elements of this film.
We have come for the body of Count Voivoda Arminius Ceausescu Dracula. I believe there is a wooden stake in the heart. You will take us to him.
How did you know about that?
I'm a relative.
Can you identify the body?
We will take the body.
Because... this is a A Devid?
That's right. It's a Devid Lynch. That makes sense, this actually.
Is a Devid Lynch film.
A Devid Lynch presents film. He was the executive producer. Obviously, he was in the movie very briefly. I could have done with a little more David Lynch inclusion, because whenever he's on screen, it's always great.
He's just so darling.
I like him.
In addition to being so talented, he's just fun to watch. What a darling
man.
And
they also act like he's going to be in it more.
Well, I think that's was like one of the pitches, right? Like when we have, give me somebody famous. When we have Keanu Reeves on our podcast, it'll be like, the Keanu Reeves podcast featuring Gem Hunt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
One thing that I read that is that his wife was more, he or his longtime collaborator who he was briefly married to was more involved in this movie than he is.
Interesting. See, that was what I was trying to find in my research, was what role did David Lynch play in this film other than just being the producer and having a brief role, and I couldn't find any connection, which made me wonder, is Almereyda just kind of riffing off of Lynch, or is it just kind of a natural stylistic thing where he was doing something similar in a similar era as David Lynch was?
Or, inspired, or they were like, they ran in the same circles. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out. I feel bad. So, like, his wife, but she's like a long, she wrote The Straight Story. She's like really involved in Twin Peaks. And for some reason, I just like blanked on her name. Mary Sweeney.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So she was a little more involved in this, I think. And then he was, they were like collaborators. And that's why he had the executive producer credit or presents or whatever.
Right. But it was interesting. I thought that, you know, it wasn't completely a Lynch rip in any sense, and maybe I just view anything that's kind of weird like this through the lens of being a David Lynch fan, but I couldn't help myself trying to like pinpoint things where, like, that seems like a Lynch thing, this soundtrack sounds like a Lynch thing.
He was,
you know,
involved in the soundtrack, I think, too. And then I'll, you know, speaking of soundtrack, My Bloody Valentine, Portishead, just want to say those are some of the things that were in it. So it was very like 90s hipster, two bands that I actually like, but especially My Bloody Valentine. But I might be the only one here because I'm the old one. Yeah, I think maybe it wasn't a rip, but it was like some of the things he was doing, but without that like magic that he has that makes it that like actual earnestness and belief that he brings to everything, that even if it feels kind of snobby or arty, you're like, but then there's like some trucker over here that you feel like he understands. You know what
I mean?
There's
a level of like, just, I feel like down to earth.
Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, down to earth is a good.
Yeah. Like, I would also say like, not necessarily like fully relatability, but just like familiar. Like, I think that's what he brings is like, I don't know, familiar. Like, everyone can kind of resonate weirdly with like, I don't know, some of the ideas that are like presented. I don't know. There's just something for everybody, I feel like, with him.
Like, you can't take the substance out of the style and have it still work the same. And with him, like, the substance is always there or something.
I think with also a certain level of nostalgia for people, too. Like, he just, I don't know how to explain it. Like,
he's a good Pacific Northwest boy.
He depicts, like, everyone's small town. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That
and
kind of
vibe. And this has, like, the style elements of that, like, the black and white and the arty and the beautiful women with like long shots of their beautiful faces without maybe the like heart or guts or something to back it up. I don't know. Cody's like silent.
But the moxie.
No, that's interesting. I just wanted to hear your takes on that, just because my gut instinct as I was watching this is it felt like there was a Lynch component, but I wasn't entirely sure if there was, other than him being connected as a producer. And so that was the thing I was kind of struggling with trying to reconcile when I was watching this, is it just a stylistic similarity of the era, or was there more there?
Or that new excitement about digital, you know, it could have been people he was like linked to for the like excitement of digital video and how it could like really be like democratizing and like, you know, like Inland Empire, that was his big.
Yeah.
Which we watched the restoration of it that made it much better. But the first time I watched that, I was like, I mean, I'm not a big digital video person.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Speaking of digital video,
oh my God.
Let's get into some of the
Buggy's ready.
The artsy, artsy fartsy art film elements of this film. And I really just, I put the David Lynch segment there just to kind of transition into this because I thought it would be a good segue into talking about this. So this is in the fine art section at Movie Madness, not the horror movie section, which I thought was interesting. And obviously we've noted this is black and white, high contrast cinematography. The cinematographer, Jim Denault, did some really amazing work here. I think there are some really amazing shots in this film.
Mm-hmm.
But one interesting note, and I've seen this referenced in multiple articles at this point, so sure. Director Michael Almereyda shot the majority of film at night and a good deal of it with a PXL 2000, which was basically a toy video camera that was specifically marketed to children. As a result, the black and white images are usually dark and grainy. Sometimes it's a bit of a struggle to tell just what exactly is happening on screen. Those hazy images combined with the largely deadpan performances of the cast give the film an undeniably dreamlike feel. I can't remember where I found that quote, and I apologize for that. I'm assuming it's one of the articles I referenced earlier. A little note about the PXL 2000, also known as the Fisher-Price Pixel Vision camera.
Oh, whoa. The pixels. Yeah. Here they come, the pixels.
It was introduced in 1987. It could record sound and images on a compact cassette. It was marketed to kids. It was pulled from the market after a year, but was soon rediscovered by low-budget filmmakers. Almereyda kind of made this his trademark and used it in many of his films. In fact, I think his first film, maybe the first two or three films he made, were shot entirely on the Pixel Vision.
Oh my God. That's a good, ever watch them.
And so this is an interesting note because in this film, when there's something vampire-y going on, it pivots to this very pixelated, weird quality, which I was trying to figure out what the hell is this? Why are they doing it, for one? I mean, I kind of got it contextually, but thinking about it technically, just like, what the hell are they using here? So that was very enlightening to find out that was what he was using as his camera. But, you know, kind of with that in mind and thinking about, you know, we were talking about the dialogue heavy elements of this film. Do you think this is more of an art film or more of a horror film? Obviously, it can be both, but I feel like it may or may not be operating in one side of that spectrum.
I think it is like an art film. From my perspective, while it is a horror film, I don't think that's necessarily what it's like focusing on at all. I think it is more focusing on like the aesthetic and the feel that they're trying to create. And I think like, because I wrote in my notes about the fuck-ass camera quality. That's like literally what I said. Mm-hmm. I said lots of terrible, and then I put intentionally to like be fair, low quality camera shots for like dramatic effect. I don't know if it just like to him, it seemed cool. It was like a stylistic choice. I kind of like knowing that it's like a Fisher-Price camera.
Yeah, it makes me enjoy it better, right?
That makes me enjoy that a little bit more, but I just said I don't like it. It's what I said because it made me upset because anytime they didn't use that camera, the movie genuinely looked incredible. Like there's a scene that I really like, and I love when vampire things do this where they do like a scene of vampires sort of like walking slowly while everything around them is moving like even slower. You know, it's like they can like slow people down. And there's like this really cool scene of Nadja like sort of walking and lighting a cigarette while Jim and Van Helsing are like running behind her. And it's filmed like in, like, it looks good. And
that was
one
of my favorite shots in the film.
It looks so awesome. And it made me so upset because I was like, if only this whole movie basically wasn't shot on this fuck-ass camera, I could have seen more like cool stuff like that, because the way they were filming it, it looked really cool.
It was. I mean, and in its defense, only like 25% of it was shot on that fuck-ass camera.
I feel like it was half. It was like, I feel like it was like,
I mean, maybe it was
a clean...
And that's part of it too, when you get like used to looking at this beautiful thing and then it pivots to that.
Yeah. And that's what was like pissing me off is like, I want to specify that it is just sort of a personal preference thing.
Same.
For sure. Like it was 100% a choice that the director made and he liked it.
Right.
But I felt like it didn't do the movie justice because again, when you weren't using that camera, it made such a difference. I just feel like with that shitty camera quality, it also just like kind of made the movie feel like less quality.
And it takes you out of the story. I mean, I think it's kind of the same thing with like, I'm like appreciative of weird, like noise music, right? I'm like, that is incredible. The things you can do. But if I don't want to sit and listen to it because it's jarring, then
I liked the music. Like
music in this is different, but I'm just saying like, there's in general. Or art where it's like, there's like famous paintings that are just like a white square.
Right.
No, and I know what you mean. Well, that cool, but like,
It could be so much more.
I mean, getting away with that is good for you.
Yeah, but it sucked because again, like there were just so many cool shots. Like again, that one with Nadja lighting the cigarette.
And the main actress is so
good.
Like watching her, which by the way, this is my place to say, in the last episode I said it was Nastasia Kinski, but I think I just confused learning about this movie with learning about her like at the same time because I watched this when I was like 16. Is that how old it is? Is that about right? Yeah, 94.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I just like watching her. She's one of those people where you could just watch her face for like 2 hours.
No, she's definitely
and then
like
it gets
the
pixelated and you're like, oh, fuck, bring back her face. Yeah.
And then do you have more you want to say about this or can we segue to like the line choices?
No, that's a perfect segue because that was going to be my next question.
Okay. So this is something that like in tandem with this camera thing happening,
it's the art stuff.
It was driving me insane. I wrote only a couple down, but these really pissed me off. I want to highlight one that I liked. I already said this like off the podcast, but I said there's this line about Lucy having a tarantula. And Nadja asked her, what does she feed the tarantula? And she says, potatoes, potato salad, and deer. And I don't know. I really liked that. I just thought that one thing was really funny. But Lucy also says, I don't know why this made me so mad, but it did. In reference to her fucking spider, I tried to teach him French, but he wasn't interested.
They're actually very shy. He scares most people. What's his name?
Bella.
What does he eat?
Potatoes. Potato salad.
Beer.
I tried to teach him French, but he wasn't interested.
Maybe he has a learning disability.
These are two things converging, which is like the Lynch versus imitation of Lynch.
Exactly.
Where like Lynch has that ability to have somebody say a weird non sequitur, but like you feel it.
Yeah. And this, it pissed me off. And I was just like, shut up, Lucy.
Right.
No, everyone knows you didn't do that. Okay. You're just saying that.
Yeah.
And then also there was one that Jim said that was my hair feels drunk. And I don't know why, but I remember
that really actually. Yeah. Like bothered. He comes home and that's how you know he's been like boozing with his uncle all night. And he says, like, my hair feels drunk. Meanwhile, she's like, bleeding out, and his hair feels drunk.
A crisis.
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh,
I'm so fucked up.
I'm wasted.
My hair feels drunk," and that made me mad.
Yeah. This art film stuff does get to that. Why Cody, you felt the imitation of Lynch?
Yeah,
there's like this whole. I love art. I love art films. I love people trying things. I especially love seeing them in real life. I understand this was made 30 fucking years ago and things were different.
God.
Isn't that 30 years ago? But like there's this heart piece or like divine inspiration almost that like some things are trying for and some people just have. And
yeah, because that's what it just doesn't feel natural. Like
you should
a lot
still try.
Of these things just don't feel natural. Also, I'm so sorry I'm so sorry, girl. Your line delivery is also like a big point of contention for me because
she's not a real actress.
I don't want to be mean because I could not do any better to clarify. Mm. I'm just saying like the way she was saying this shit was 100% making it worse for me. 100%. Except potato salad.
But there's like art to that too, right? Like there's an art element to that.
Monday, I ate half a bagel, hot tea, and a can of Coke. Tuesday, I ate two Diet Cokes and a piece of pizza. Today, I had a bag of M&Ms, but I didn't eat the yellow ones.
Face it, Jim. She's a zombie.
You know, that is one of the things that I noted that kind of bogged this down a bit was, you know, there's some really interesting dialogue, but then there's some very meandering sort of pretentious gothy 90s dialogue that just goes on forever, which I know was a thing at that time, just people talking,
reading books.
It's just agonizing in some moments. It really, for me, I can't.
Depends on my mood for me. Yeah. Like if I'm into like hearing someone speak like a literary character.
If it's good, then it's okay. Like there's sometimes where Nadja's talking and I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of rocking with what you're saying.
It's because she's fucking transfixing though.
I know. It's because she's really good.
Some people just have that thing and they can pull off the...
Yeah. She has that ability. Whereas a lot of these other people, I'm like, oh my God, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Not just because she's gorgeous and not just because she's like Eastern European, but I think there's like that thing where you're like, I could listen to you talk all day. Well,
yeah. She has a very calming voice, but she's just glamored. Really good in this like role. I don't know how to explain it. She just has like really good like delivery. There's just something about her that works very well.
Mm-hmm. It's fuckability.
She's got moxie. Oh. She's got moxie.
Yeah.
She's got heart.
She's hot.
She is hot, but she's got heart.
Hot heart. Okay.
Fair enough. Sorry. Okay.
I'm a rambler.
I think it's important to emphasize that this is a very art film vibe in the fine art section instead of the horror section. Some people it rubbed the wrong way. Some people were into it.
They were rubbed the right way.
Some people were rubbed the correct way. If you know what I mean. But I think it is important to note, just in case if you haven't seen it, you're listening to this, you're pondering potentially watching this, and you're not into art shit, maybe this isn't going to be your jam.
You're not going to like this movie.
It's important because I think it, you know, it's heavily, very heavily inspired by this early 90s wave of trying to hit these art notes.
Yeah, it's kind of a product of its time, is what I feel like.
There was a lot of people trying to be artsy in the 90s, but without a clear direction, you know? Just kind of like trying to capitalize on all of the crazy art stuff that they might be absorbing. And this feels a little bit like that, although it does feel a little more refined. I do want to make the point that this doesn't feel like it's just somebody shitting out art bullshit out of their ass. It does feel crafted in a way that is not complete bullshit, but it is artsy.
It is. But again, like there's some cool stuff going on here. And I think there are some things that work that I enjoyed.
And I feel like as the old person in this room that was old enough to watch this when I was a teenager, as a teenager, it meant more to me than it does now.
Hmm.
And we haven't, I think we need to let it go, but The Pain of Fleeting Joy.
Oh.
We haven't even talked about that.
I wrote something about The Pain of Fleeting Joy.
The Pain of Fleeting Joy, and I was watching this with kind of like a Buddhist lens, but then later on I was like, oh, my psychology major over here, or minor, Jungian. It's Jungian psychology.
Psychology?
Yes. It doesn't, that quote is not from anywhere, but that's what
like
the self and the reconstruction of the self. The
philosophy, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Like self-actualization type principle.
Self-actualization and the like Maslow, deconstruction to like put it back together.
Yeah, like the shadow work is kind of what
and the connection
with.
Of, which, you know, the, what's it called? The collective unconscious.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that makes sense too, because that is part of Jung's, a huge part is sort of like the the internal self-reflection aspect.
So I just want to like put that in there at the end of talking about like fuck shit on art. Is like there is a thing here that is like a universal thing that maybe it's clunky in the 90s, but it's like a...
I liked that. I wrote a quote about it too, something Nausea said where she just said it's true. Life is full of pain, but I feel the pain of fleeting joy.
Right.
Which I kind of liked. I like resonated with that in a sense.
Well, as the dumbest man in the room, I'll say that I didn't clock any of this. And I was wondering if maybe this film was too smart for me.
And no.
It has been confirmed that I was just too stupid to understand anything.
It's smarter than it is, but I do want to give a nod to like some of the things that are based in actual thought that aren't just like some art student like pulling something out of their butthole.
There is some intent, for
It's not... It's in between.
It is, yes. It's in this, like, purgatory.
Yeah. Of the 90s. The 90s were a fucking purgatory. But you guys are... That's also what I'm saying is I'm just old. You're too young to remember.
Why do you keep, like, basically calling us your sons? Like, stop doing that. Stop.
My son is 2 years younger than me, and that gap sometimes... He's my husband.
My son.
No, but sometimes you're just like, just 2 years like from the things you were exposed to in high school sometimes is like enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where he's young and I'm old.
I don't know. All I learned how to do was roast hot dogs in high school. So.
And I didn't learn that. Yeah. We weren't learning that.
That's not what you were
roasting. I was learning to like drive the Conestoga wagon.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk about the soundtrack really quick before we close this out, because I think it's kind of a good little punctuation mark to put on this thing.
Yeah.
Because I think the score was very effective at certain moments, and it definitely feels Lynchy again. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it reminded me of not just early David Lynch work, but sort of some of the sounds that they used and some of the music felt almost like Twin Peaks The Returned at certain moments, depending on how they layered it over the cinematography. But the songs selected for the soundtrack from popular artists, that was a bit interesting. So we have multiple tracks by Portishead. We have some My Bloody Valentine. We got Space Hog. We got The Verve. So it's very 90s.
Mm-hmm. Some good, some bad.
And I would say out of all of these, the Portishead works the best. Definitely. But at the same time, it's kind of like, of course you're using Portishead in this movie, you know?
Cool. Yeah, it adds up though with the vibe for sure.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
But it feels so like fine art that when something like Space Hog comes on, you're like, what the fucking
shit? Was that right at the end? Is that one? Because we were like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like, you know, there was the Verve song somewhere. There was the Space Hog song somewhere. And it just felt so jarring with sort of when you're starting to embrace this artistic film, and then you have just like 90s alt rock out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like, what the hell?
I liked too, like, not just on like, you know, songs used like in the film, they sort of had like a cool background sound when like really vampire like shit was happening. That's like been stuck in my head all day. Like, I can't explain it, but there was like some cool like sound effects going on.
I
like,
think Lynch was
ones.
On the sound. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think he has something to do with the soundtrack.
That's what it like felt like. Like when they were getting like real vampire-y. I think also in David Lynch's scene too, they use that sound, but there's just like some moments where they use this like kind of cool, ominous sound sort of that I enjoyed.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I thought that he maybe had something to do with that, but maybe not. Maybe help them get the rights to songs, though, just by being David Lynch. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, anyway, we've talked this son of a bitch to death.
Yeah, sorry. Let's art film, man. Art talk.
Art movie, art talk. Let's do some business. Let's get in our business suits and do some business.
Yeah, business.
Then we'll close this thing out. An obscurity rating on this artsy piece of shit. We have 3,711 IMDb votes. 30 IMDb critics, 25 Rotten Tomatoes reviews. That's crazy. That's higher than we usually see. I feel like we usually see like 2 or 3 or some shit. Maybe 10, effect. But 25 on Rotten Tomatoes. What the hell? And then, as I could find, currently available streaming three places. And as we noted, there are DVDs and I think a new Blu-ray out there. All in all, a 4.5 on our obscurity rating scale, which I think kind of speaks to something, Beth, you were noting before we even started recording, actually, maybe a week ago or so. How does this not have more views with like the David Lynch craze in the connection
there? Especially since he's passed.
Yeah. So that's interesting. But I think maybe this fleshes that out a bit. Like, it kind of does have enough, still within our criteria, but enough to be kind of lower on our scale.
But yeah, to not have more people be like, oh, he died, I'm watching anything his name's connected to. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just kind of, I think, kind of flew under the radar, maybe.
Maybe. Okay, right. Let's do the thing that we do where we vote and we get scared and we close our eyes for no goddamn reason. I'm going to count to three and then we're going to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, whether this is a horror gem or a turd or somewhere in between. And then we'll talk a little bit about our thoughts and feelings and then we'll get the fuck out of here. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. You goddamn cheaters.
Okay. I'll be the one.
Okay.
What are you doing? Okay. Well,
she's
okay.
I'll go up then. No, if she's going down, I'll go up.
You can't do that.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, because it's complicated.
This house is still a democracy.
We're allowed
Democratic
to change
Republic
certain
agendas.
Goddamn Marge Taylor Greene over here.
Things don't necessarily fit the ranking style because it's complicated.
Okay. It's complicated.
Here's what we had. We had one fully down. We had two halves, which are not supposed to be allowed. And then they negotiated some health care benefits for their constituents.
Hey,
and
shutdown
one,
ends.
And one
Everybody
went
wins.
Up and one went down. And so we had, I guess, two down and one up,
yeah,
ultimately.
We negotiated.
Who wants to talk about their thoughts and feelings about their vote?
I'll go first because I'm going to go very briefly. I ended up being the up after negotiations. I got like part of Greenland and a timeshare in Florida.
Did you get any
underwater
Creamland?
None. I tried, but I think it's worth a watch, but I kind of don't think it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
And that's, I'll just say that. Kind of not a horror movie, kind of worth a watch just to see somebody do something interesting with like beautiful people in it. And Peter Fonda was pretty fucking badass in it. And that's all.
I kind of feel the same. I guess I sort of think like this wasn't really my type of movie necessarily. Like sometimes I do like artsy movies, but if I'm in like a particular mood, I think. But I liked a lot of the concepts in this movie. There were just, again, some scenes and some shots that I like genuinely enjoyed. And I would recommend this film. I do agree it's not necessarily a horror movie. It is exploring horror concepts, but it's definitely more just like an indie art movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, it was not for me. It's not my cup of tea.
Fair enough. I think anytime you're dabbling in Dracula or vampires, it has to be considered in the horror conversation. But it definitely felt more of like an artistic exploration of those concepts. And I like art movies. I like when things get weird. There were some beautiful moments in this film. Most of the acting was good, not all of it.
Galaxy Craze, not really an actress, doing her own thing now.
So sorry.
Yeah. But ultimately, I think, you know, despite enjoying the experience while I was watching it, when I walked away, I didn't take anything away from it.
Yeah.
It, like, had no impact on me. I didn't take anything away from it that I thought was notable. And I think as a gut instinct, that's always kind of what I fall back on is like, even if something's shitty, if there's something I'm thinking about afterwards, it kind of makes me have a second thought about, oh, is this good or not? But there was really nothing wrong with it, but there was also nothing that left me thinking about it at the end. And so I couldn't give it a thumbs up because of that. Okay. Well, we did our big one.
Turd.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a turd. Even though that feels unfair,
because
it's a well-crafted piece of art, but in the realm of horror films, you know, I gotta say, horror fans, ain't gonna like it.
No.
Yeah, true.
No.
Horror fans are not gonna like this. If you haven't seen it, you're a horror fan. Unless you're a very, very artistic horror fan, you're not gonna like this. Okay. Now you know what time it is.
Oh!
It's time for motherfucking special time!
Special time! Right. It's a secret.
I'm excited. I'm so excited about this special time. So I actually have to start this with a quick story. So I don't know if like this is relatable, but I'm sure it is. Like, have you ever like seen like a very tiny clip or picture of a movie or something, and you've been like, what the fuck? What is that movie?
Yes.
What is it? Like, this happened to me multiple times, but this has been over the course of like 3 years that I've been trying to figure this out. On TikTok, randomly, like 2.5 years ago, this random video came up on my For You page that was like an edit of sort of like female faces of horror. And randomly, this like girl popped up. She had like the craziest bang ever. I loved it. And she had blood all over her face. And she was like standing above this bloodied kid with a crossbow in his hand. And they were in the snow. And I was like, what fucking movie is that? And I spent so long like doing research, like trying to figure anything out. Like, I was just looking up girl in snow with blood, guy with crossbow. Like, I was really going for it. I was trying so hard. And then while I was looking for this movie, Nadja, I remembered I had found that movie, and I was like, oh my god, this was like such a problem in my life. I'd like randomly think about this before I was going to bed, like, what the fuck is this movie? And I remembered I had saved it on my IMDb. So without further ado, the movie I have been looking for so long that I finally watched was a movie called Liver Leaf.
Oh.
That was Liver released.
Leaf? No, I don't know about it.
I've never heard of such a thing. Oh my god.
This movie was so fun. So this movie was made, I think it was released in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a little, Liver I want to like make right sure I get my facts straight. Yes, Liver Leaf. It was released in Japan. It's a Japanese film. It's in Japanese. And the director is, and I'm probably going to butcher this, I'm sorry, I was not prepared, is Itsuki Naito, I think is how you might say their name. But this movie was exactly what I expected. So I don't want to get too much into it because I really enjoyed this. But this is essentially like a very classic high school revenge story.
Okay.
That I really, really liked. So it's about our main character, whose name I also forgot. It's also because it's Japanese, something I've noticed is there's a lot of different names that people are called by depending on their rank. Yeah. So she's also referred to, I think, a couple different names, but her name is Nozaki. And it's sort of her story about being severely bullied at her school. She just moved to a small town where there's literally 13 people in her class.
Oh,
and they're graduating junior high and transitioning into high school. And she's just been completely ostracized from her entire like class. No one will talk to her. And the like level of severity she is getting bullied is extremely intense. There are like four girls, and there's like the popular girl, which I'm also like, she's the popular girl out of like 12 people. So let's like calm down. She's right, not really right. popular. Okay. But they hate her, and we don't really like realize for a little bit why, but it's so classic. It's over a boy. It's literally that this boy didn't like this popular girl and liked Nozaki instead, and that's literally the whole reason why they do these things. But the things they do, for example, are like they put dead birds in Nozaki's desk. That's like a casual thing they do. They also, one of them puts a bunch of tacks on the bottom of their shoe and actually kicks Naizaki's father down the stairs.
Oh, no.
So the level of like bullying is very intense and severe. And another common theme in this movie is that like adult figures are not doing anything about it. Like
right.
this class is pretty much like they rule themselves. Like their teacher, they call her the barf teacher, because anytime any conflict erupts in this classroom, she just leaves the class and vomits. And that's all she does. So they bully her.
I'm into it.
And
you would be.
Basically, and this is not a spoiler. This is just like the very beginning of the film. The bullying escalates to like such a severe point that like Naizaki decides not to go to school. And in doing so, it's like a domino effect, because she gets to start spending more time with like her family. She has like her dad, her mom, and then her little sister. And she also gets to spend more time with this boy, the boy that she likes, that likes her, that doesn't like her classmate. And that inadvertently causes the horrifying conflict of this film, which is her classmates decide to pull a prank on her because she won't come to school.
I feel like this is going to make me sad.
And the prank is that they set her house on fire.
Ugh.
They set her house on fire. And her parents die. And her sister is like severely, severely fucked up. Like she's, it's like even beyond third degree burns is what we're working with. Like she's going to die. Okay. And instead of like just crumbling in despair, like anyone naturally would, Naizaki says, fuck that. And she decides, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to kill every single fucking person in the school, basically. Well, everyone in my class is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. So she kills just about everybody. There's a little bit more going on that I'm not going to spoil. There is a twist. And it is so good. It was like so worth it. And there, I have a quote from it that I really like. Liverleaf is a plant, by the way. That's what it is. And this is said at the beginning of the movie. After surviving the harsh winter, their flowers bloom and push away the snow. Now, this movie is not for everybody. I want to preface this. It is a very dark movie that does not necessarily have a good ending, but that's kind of the point of the film. The film is, I think, really well done. It's about bullying. It's about ostracization. It's about also just young kids, because these kids are like 13 or 14. And it's so well done. And I'm just so happy that I finally like found this film. Because I don't know if you guys have had that experience, but like this was like a years long. Like, and I don't even think I did it justice explaining it, because like it lived up also to my expectation, which I was not expecting. I like had never heard anyone talk about this film. I was going to do it for a gem hunt thing, but I've been doing a lot of movies from Japan recently, honestly, and I was like, maybe I'll leave this one for the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
But then I watched it and I knew you would hate it so much.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew my mom would be very upset. So I was like, I'm not gonna make her watch this movie.
Well, I wanna watch it now, but
now I wanna watch
it. It's really good. Also, you can stream it for free. And
okay.
It's super good. I recommend it. It's definitely harsh, but it's also short and sweet. Nice. It's very efficient, and it's also kind of bittersweet in a way that I enjoyed, and it was not at all what I expected in the best way possible.
All right.
It's crazy, too. The bullying these kids do, because I was also going to do a whole, my special time was going to be bullying culture specifically, because the level of bullying, these kids are like stabbing each other. There is a scene where this girl stabs a mechanical pencil through another girl's whole hand. Mm. And I thought to myself, I was like, maybe there's something wrong with my brain. Maybe. I was like, not one single time did anyone think to punch any one of these people in the face.
To be like, nope,
done. Like, the shit they let slide is crazy. But that's also the point, is that you're young, you're impressionable, and you want people to like you.
Right, so you'll just put up with it.
But it's so, these kids are fucked up. It's really great. Fucked up kids, lots of snow, very great. Please watch.
Okay.
Unless you don't like really, really gross stuff, then don't. Maybe don't.
Okay, good note. I was just looking up this director's filmography. Also has a film called Let's Make the Teacher Have a Miscarriage Club.
Oh my god,
the themes that this director is exploring I find deeply fascinating.
Right.
And
they had a hard time in school
also,
I think.
Yeah, apparently
the cinematography in this film is really incredible too. Like, if nothing else, this movie looks awesome. And also, it's great. Please watch it. It's so good.
Unless you're feeling sensitive.
Unless, you don't want to see a child burn alive, which I totally get.
Oh, my God.
No animal death.
Oh, my God.
Children burned alive.
You heard it here
first, folks.
Jesus Christ. Okay, well, we've done it.
4 hours.
We're at the end. We've recorded for 4 hours.
Yes.
Go to our website, gemhuntpod.com. Find us on Blue Sky. Check us out on Instagram. If you see a sticker around town in Portland, Oregon, don't pull it down. It's keeping us from burning to the ground. They're fireproof stickers that we're putting up to stop Antifa from burning us to the ground. See you next week, bitches.
Dirt dogs on a gem hunt. We'll be right back.